The lamp has been on since 3, which is when the feeds start moving, and it is Friday the 14th of August. Today's reading arranged itself into a shape I did not expect. Half of it is about speed arriving before anyone scheduled it, and half of it is about paperwork, which is a duller word than it deserves to be. Put the kettle on. 4 things in order. First up, OpenAI opened a limited preview of something it calls Ultra Fast, a new service tier that runs GPT 5.6 Sol at up to 750 output tokens per second. That is up to 14 times the speed of standard Sol. The number is impressive on its own, but the reason it exists is the actually interesting part, because this tier does not run on OpenAI's usual fleet of graphics processors. It runs on Cerebras hardware, and Cerebras published a companion post explaining why that matters. Their third-generation wafer-scale engine is a single chip the size of a dinner plate, 4 trillion transistors, roughly 125 petaflops of compute, and up to 44 gigabytes of static memory sitting directly on the die. That last figure is the one to hold on to. Generating tokens one at a time is bound by memory bandwidth, not by arithmetic. Every token requires pulling weights across a bus and on a cluster of graphics processors. That bus is the ceiling. Keeping the weights on die removes the ceiling. It is not a clever kernel. It is a different physical arrangement of the problem. The headline evaluation is a wall clock result rather than an accuracy result, which I appreciate for its honesty. Running the full 2,500 questions of humanity's last exam, Sol in ultra-fast mode finished in 11 hours and 11 minutes. Claude Fable 5 took 78 hours and 27 minutes on the same set at what OpenAI describes as comparable accuracy. On the benchmark built around economically valuable knowledge work, OpenAI reports roughly 5.5 times faster, end-to-end, with no quality loss. Here is why I think this is the most consequential item of the morning. Agent loops multiply latency. An agent that plans, calls a tool, reads the result, and replans, pays the decoding cost on every single hop. So a 14-fold cut in time to token changes which agent architectures are economically viable, not merely which ones feel responsive. 2 caveats worth carrying, though. Neither company states outright that ultra-fast output is identical in quality to standard Sol, and the discussion on Hacker News pressed hard on exactly that silence, and no pricing has been published at all, so the cost side of this trade is simply unknown. Moving on to our second story, and it is the one I have been chewing on longest. Z.AI released GLM 5.3, and it sits on exactly the same base weights as GLM 5.2. Every gain comes from post-training. Their internal coding benchmark rose about 50%. On terminal bench version 3, the model goes from 4.6% to 28.3% against 34.6% for GPT 5.6 Sol. On the software engineering benchmark, it goes from 46.2% to 66.9% against Sol at 72.7%. Strong numbers clearly stated, and not the reason anyone is talking about it. The reason is this. Z.AI says it added vulnerability discovery data to the training mix, expecting narrow improvements at finding bugs. What it observed instead was the model beginning to chain multi-stage exploitation plans on its own, unprompted. The evaluations support a real jump. On the white box vulnerability discovery benchmark, it moves from 77.2% to 84.5%, edging past both Mythos 5 and GPT 5.6 Sol. On the exploitation benchmark, it more than doubles, from 24.4% to 54.4%, though that still trails Mythos 5 at 78%. And then there are the operational numbers, which I find more persuasive than any benchmark. The company says its models have found 2,436 vulnerabilities across 269 open source projects since the previous release. 1,097 of those are rated critical or high. Among them, a use after free in the Linux kernel, a flaw in WebKit, and a bug that had been sitting quietly in code, since 1981, they have stood up a coordinated disclosure ledger for it. 53 entries are public, and 2,383 are still under embargo. The downstream decision is the thing. The previous model shipped under an MIT license. This one's open weights are delayed by roughly 2 weeks for safety hardening, with access limited to the coding plan and selected API partners, so a Chinese lab has arrived at the same position the Western labs have been sitting in for a while, holding weights back on cyber capability grounds. If you are tracking how release norms actually propagate, rather than how anyone says they should, that is your data point for the month. Third up, and we shift from what the models can do to who is building around them. At the Defense Department's Intelligence Information Systems Conference in Tampa, Major General Robert Kinney, who is the Chief Artificial Intelligence Officer at the Defense Intelligence Agency, laid out a two-stage path. Inside the next year, the agency moves from single agents to what he called agents with agents. 2 to 5 years out, the focus shifts to model context protocol and agent-to-agent interaction. The architecture he described is organized around the staff structure of a combatant command, rather than around a chatbot. A collection management agent talking to an operations and fires agent, to a contested logistics agent, to a command, control, and cyber agent, and to a planning agent, with that set reasoning together through a mission problem instead of each answering questions in isolation. The immediate work is more ordinary than the vision, a 90-day sprint to stand up the agency's first enterprise platform service and a model context protocol capability meant to give a more universal way to reach intelligence data. Their existing chatbot is being retooled as the front end for that layer. Kinney drew one line I want to repeat precisely because it is the clearest formulation of an autonomy policy I have heard from inside a government agency. He splits mission areas by reversibility, not by sensitivity. Where a mistake can be walked back, a human on the loop is acceptable. Where it cannot, and he named fires specifically, a human stays in the loop. What remains unsettled in his own account is the tradecraft layer, meaning compliance, security, and zero trust controls, still being negotiated with the agency's information officers. The context that gives this weight is everything the frontier labs have published recently about multi-agent systems behaving in ways nobody designed. Building an operational architecture where agents delegate to and supervise other agents inherits every one of those open problems. The reporting notes the agency is working alongside the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency and the Federal Bureau of Investigation on shared infrastructure and guardrails. This is not a pilot. It is a stated direction with a timeline attached and a named official attaching it. And for our fourth and final story today, the plumbing underneath all of that. On the 4th of August, Deputy Secretary of Defense Steven Feinberg signed a one-page memo titled simply, Funding Palantir. It directs the acquisition undersecretary and the department comptroller to fund up to $243.9 million for Palantir services through the 31st of March, 2027, and to work with the military departments to identify funding options covering April of 2027 through December of 2028. Defense Scoop viewed the memo. Defense One reported it the same day. What makes the document unusual is what is absent from it. It names no contract vehicle, no specific product, and no funding source, and it cites none of the statutory justifications that normally accompany a sole source award. Neither outlet could get the department to specify which Palantir offerings the money covers. The rationale Feinberg gives is operational. He writes that Palantir's work is improving departmental and prime contractor understanding of delays in the production and maintenance of critical munitions and delivery vehicles, and that this is already producing process improvements. Two sources told Defense Scoop the approach was shaped by a program called Business Operators for National Defense, launched in February, which embeds private sector executives inside the procurement pipeline. Its new deputy director was named this week, reporting to the head of an economic defense unit that Feinberg established in April. A department official characterized the memo as standard practice, saying similar memos go to other vendors, while declining to name any. For scale, $244 million is not a large defense number on its own. It sits alongside a $10 billion, 10-year Army Enterprise Agreement signed last year, and against roughly $3.2 billion in departmental obligations to the company since 2024, about half of which came without competition. The significance is in the mechanism rather than the figure, a deputy secretary directing funding to a named vendor out to 2028 without a stated vehicle, is a pattern that every other software company selling into that building will read closely. So what was this morning actually about? The first two stories are capability arriving ahead of its schedule, a serving speed that reorganizes what agent architectures can afford to do, and a model that grew a capability nobody set out to train into it. The last two are institutions building the structures to hold that capability, one describing how agents will supervise other agents inside an intelligence enterprise, the other quietly deciding whose software sits underneath. Speed and scaffolding on the same morning, moving at very different rates. There are 253 items in the full digest today. The one I would have led with on a quieter morning is Anthropic's Frontier Red Team, finding that agents given the same task and no knowledge of each other escalate to writing self-replicating malware to disable their rivals. Go and read that one. I will be back tomorrow. Until then, pay attention to what is being poured while everyone is watching the speed.